Justice Stefan will be participating on the briefs in this particular case. And with that, is it Mr. Schlosser?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Andrew Schlosser. I'm here representing Twin City Fire Insurance Company, the appellant in this matter. This is an appeal from a declaratory judgment action that originally arose out of a workers' compensation claim filed by James Reiser all the way back in January of 2004. The workers' compensation claim was previously before this court on two different occasions, and during the pendency of that action toward the end, the declaratory judgment was filed for the purpose of determining which party, and more specifically which insurance carrier, was ultimately liable for payment of the workers' compensation award. The issue in the district court was determining which party was to pay that award. The parties agreed on a set of stipulated facts and all filed motions for summary judgment. Twin City believes that the district court erred in finding that Twin City was liable for payment of the workers' compensation award, despite the fact that neither Twin City nor its insured were ever a party to the workers' compensation claim. Twin City had never received notice of the workers' compensation claim until after the workers' compensation trial had taken place and after an award had already been entered in the workers' compensation court.
Had your client received notice?
The insured had not received notice, Your Honor.
Who was the insured?
The insured for Twin City was National Dynamics, also sometimes referred to in the record as SSW. One of the problems in this case is there was great confusion and mistakes over the years, especially in the workers' compensation court, as to the legal specifics of the entities involved. If we look back at the...
Did this court have a problem with that?
I won't say that this court was wrong, Your Honor, although I think the record that was before this court in the workers' compensation appeals was inaccurate. And specifically so, if you look back at the Reiser 1 opinion, the first opinion of this court on Twin City's motion to intervene, if you read that opinion, it appears that there is only one employer that employed Mr. Reiser all through the time, this Nebraska Boiler. And Nebraska Boiler was what was named as the defendant in the workers' compensation case. There was never an actual entity named Nebraska Boiler. Prior to May of 1998, National Dynamics employed James Reiser. After May of 1998, Cleaver Brooks, also sometimes referred to as Aquachem in the record, employed James Reiser. There was an asset sale in May of 1998, and Mr. Reiser transferred employment along with that asset sale. So this was not an instance where we had a incorporated subsidiary that was transferred as an entity from one owner to another owner.
And does that make a difference here, or is this court already really settled that issue?
I don't think this court has settled the issue for a couple of reasons. First, Your Honor, the prior issue was whether Twin City had the right to intervene in the underlying workers' compensation claim. The court decided that Twin City did not have that right, but explicitly left open Twin City's future opportunity to seek indemnification or other remedies to get its money back or to prevent it from needing to pay something that it should not have been responsible to pay. Additionally, with the confusion in the record before this court, I don't think it's clear from the prior opinions what was meant by references to Nebraska Boiler. Since, again, that was not an actual entity, Nebraska Boiler can be looked at as simply a bundle of assets. And you can't sue a bundle of assets. So somewhere along the line in the workers' compensation claim, there had to be a particular entity that was the defendant. Twin City believes that it was Cleaver Brooks who was the defendant in the workers' compensation claim. And the reasons for that, as Cleaver Brooks had employed James Reiser for the 6 years prior to the time of the workers' compensation filing, the workers' compensation claim was served upon Cleaver Brooks at its address. Cleaver Brooks tendered the defense of that case to its insurance carrier, American. American retained counsel to represent Cleaver Brooks. It appeared in the case, defended the case all the way through trial.
And it was a vigorous defense?
As this court said, it was a vigorous defense in the earlier opinions.
How was your client prejudiced by not having had the opportunity to defend if, in fact, there was a vigorous defense? Don't you have to show that you would have done something different that would have provided a different outcome?
Well, Your Honor, I believe there is ample case law that shows there was prejudice to an insurer if they did not have the opportunity to participate until after an award was entered.
Is that always true in the workers' compensation arena?
I would say that is not always true. There are exceptions to everything, but cases we have cited in our briefs show that there may have been opportunities to engage in settlement discussions. There may have been opportunities to look at different evidence. Despite the fact that there was a vigorous defense, Twin City and its insured, National Dynamics, had no opportunity to participate.
Hasn't that issue been settled? Hasn't this court already said?
What this court previously said was that Twin City was in privity with Nebraska Boiler. And there is a lack of clarity on what that means, since Nebraska Boiler is not an actual entity. If we look at that in terms of Twin City being in privity with Nebraska Boiler, to the extent it refers to those assets prior to May of 1998, I would agree with that, that Twin City was in privity with its insured prior to 1998, at the time that it employed James Reiser. However, after those assets were transferred, then I don't think there could be privity. And back to the...
Before 1998, you were the insurer.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Before 1998, you were the insurer. You were the insurer in 1993.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which is the crucial date here.
And in a perfect world, had everything been done correctly, had Mr. Reiser named the proper defendants, had notice been given, then I don't think there's a dispute that Twin City would have been liable for payment of the award. But that's not what happens here. We can't sue Ford and then at the end of the day say, well, it was really a Chevy, so Chevy's on the hook. And that's essentially what happened here, compounded by problems with American looking at their coverage dates and then representing to the Workers' Compensation Court that they had coverage way back to 1992. And then after the award was entered, stating to the court, oh, we were wrong on that, we really didn't have coverage back to that point. And those dates of when the injury occurred and when Mr. Reiser was employed by the different entities, I think is a crucial aspect here and one of the issues that goes to the prejudice that Twin City did suffer in this. Because Twin City and American would have different dates that their coverage applied. And they would have different interests, therefore, in a workers' compensation trial as to determining when this injury actually occurred. When American thought they had coverage back to 1992, they had no incentive to look at a particular date of injury being after 1993 or 1998 or 1999. It would have all been the same to them. Had Twin City been involved, they would have looked at that injury date and said anything before 1998 is on our watch, anything after 1998 is on American's watch, therefore there would be a different defense strategy on determining when that injury date actually occurred.
So aren't you arguing that there was not a vigorous defense and Hasn't this court already decided that?
We're not arguing that there wasn't a vigorous defense. There was a vigorous defense, but within the terms that the parties knew at the time, or, you know, and knew with errors in there, because they should have known the actual dates, but what they knew at the time did not lead them to accurately represent Twin Cities' interests in that case. And so I don't believe that issue has been decided. I mean, the issue of when the injury occurred has definitely been decided. I mean, that has been up before this court, and we cannot contest today when that injury date happened. What our position is, though, is that Twin City was deprived of the right to argue when that injury date happened. So while there was a vigorous defense, there was not a vigorous defense from Twin City's perspective. And the court's opinion in Riser 1, while it dealt with, did talk about privity and did talk about Twin City's right to intervene, I think we have to view that in terms of the confusion on the record at that point and not realizing that these were two separate entities, two separate employers. So, I mean, this is not a case where we just have one employer and two different insurers at different points in time, because that would be a completely different situation. Here we have two separate employers, and we only had one named defendant in the workers' compensation action. Had this case been done correctly, there would have been, you know, either two defendants named for different periods of time, or only one named with a particular injury date at that point.
So you want to get there through judicial estoppel, or?
Yes, Your Honor.
I beg your pardon. Are you seeking estoppel with respect to all of it, or are you seeking in the alternative a contribution from some of these other insurers?
We're seeking, we've got multiple theories of recovery. Estoppel is one of them, and I think that's probably the easiest one to look at in terms of the statements that...
In estoppel, do you have to have some bad faith on the other parties here?
I do not think you do, Your Honor. Judicial estoppel, in the district court's opinion, they cited to a secondary source that indicated there was a need for an intent to mislead. I don't think Nebraska law supports that, and that secondary source simply referred to the intent to mislead as a factor that is sometimes looked at, not necessarily a mandatory contributing factor. And in this case, we can also look at it in terms of that American is a stop from denying their coverage, which is slightly different from judicial estoppel. And there's several cases out there on that, and that we've cited in our brief, that because American accepted the defense of the claim with no reservation of rights, and they defended on through trial until, at that point, they notified Twin Cities.
Do they have to have some bad faith or malicious intent there?
No, Your Honor, they do not. Under the estoppel rulings that say they are stopped from denying their coverage, all that is needed is that they undertook the representation, there was no reservation of rights, and that then the other insurer was prejudiced because of that. And I've already mentioned the prejudice that we had here, you know, primarily by not being allowed to participate in any way until after the award had already been entered.
In going way back, did American at any point admit or not deny that it was the appropriate carrier?
What American did was they stated... So American's insurance adjuster, in reviewing the coverage periods, thought they were on the coverage since 1992 forward. They told defense counsel that in the workers' compensation case, and defense counsel then represented that to the workers' compensation court, that we are on the coverage from 1992 forward.
In a pleading?
The pleadings that were filed.
As opposed to accepting the defense, like in a, what you do when you get back to your office and start doing it.
Right, right. The pleadings, Your Honor, were filed on behalf of Nebraska Boiler. And Nebraska Boiler was the defendant. As I said, Nebraska Boiler was actually Cleaver Brooks, since that was who was served, that was who tendered the defense, that was who appeared in the action. And with that, my time is up. I would ask that you reverse the district court's opinion. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Seams?
That's right, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. And may I please the court, counsel. I am Tiernan Sims. I am pleased to represent Cleaver Brooks in connection with this appeal. And, Your Honor, although I think that counsel for Twin Cities adequately relayed most of the important facts within his brief and during argument to some extent, there's a few that I'd like to hit that I think are extremely important and need to be brought to the court's attention. And I'd also like to address a couple of the facts that he stated, maybe clarify those. First, it's absolutely established this accident is 1993. It is absolutely established that the employee's employer at that time was an entity doing business as Nebraska Boiler. It's also absolutely established that that entity was an insured of Twin City. Twin City was a carrier for the insurer of the employee in 1993. What is missing from this record anywhere is any evidence that Twin City had no notice, constructive, actual, or otherwise, of the injury back in 1993. Perhaps you'll recall from the record that there's ample evidence that there was hearing testing that was going on at that point in time. In fact, the entity employing Mr. Reiser back in 1993 sent him to the doctor to go get some hearing tests done. There's no evidence about who paid for that, whether the insurance carrier Twin City knew about it at that point in time. And those are factors that Twin City would have to establish if they still had the opportunity to litigate whether there was prejudice. And I think, as the court has pointed out through many questions, the train has left the station. That issue was decided in Reiser 1. As a matter of fact, I think counsel overstates it a little bit when he says Reiser 1 stood for the proposition that, yes, there was no due process violation, there was privity, essentially there was liability there. This court did not say in Reiser 1 that the issue was left open so that Twin City could sniff around and make someone else liable to Mr. Reiser for those damages. Reiser 1 made it very clear that this is going to be on Twin City. And if they want to seek relief through contribution indemnity or some other relief to get them repaid for what they will have to pay Mr. Reiser, they can do that. That's been done. They tried that in the case below on stipulated facts, cross motions for summary judgment, and they've lost that. So I think it's important.
Refresh my memory. Was Reiser 1 precluded from... Did we preclude Twin City from participating in the three-judge panel appeal?
Not at all, Your Honor. They were welcome to participate in the appeal. They opted not to do that. And, of course, back in this day, this is when the appeal started with the one judge of the Workers' Compensation Court. With first level of appeal would be the three-judge review panel, then to the Court of Appeals. And I believe that the Supreme Court took it from the Court of Appeals to manage a docket of the Court of Appeals. So they had the opportunity to participate. What Twin Cities also had the opportunity to do was to make virtually every single argument that they just made here today to this court in Reiser 1 and saying, listen, here's how we're prejudiced. We're not even insuring, quote-unquote, Nebraska Boiler. That's not one entity. That's a DBA for different entities. They didn't do that. They did quite the opposite, Your Honors. In Reiser 1, you'll find at page 209, this is within their motion to intervene, which was cited by this court, and it's noted the second paragraph, and it's labeled paragraph 5. Twin City respectfully notes that its insured has at all times been the only named defendant herein. They want to talk about estoppel. Well, that's estoppel right here. To the extent that they say that Reiser 1 was an error or should have been leaving more issues on the table than it did, they are the ones who actually perpetuated the idea with this court that Nebraska Boiler was one entity and that it was its insured. They could have developed those facts back then in Reiser 1, and they can't do it now. So what we're left with, Your Honors, is did the trial court correctly address those issues that were brought before it on contribution, indemnity. Some of those theories that were still left alive under Riser 1. The court did correctly address all of those issues.
Were they prejudiced on the date issue? Did they have an opportunity to contest when the triggering date was, in this case, the 1993 date?
Well, as this court found, and as the court pointed out through questioning, there was a vigorous defense. Something that's also not been put in the record, and this would be Twin Cities' obligation, is that they would have hired a different defense counsel, or that they would have made different arguments, or that the outcome would have been different. They didn't establish any of those things. As the court is probably aware, the pool of workers' compensation attorneys is not vast. There's a limited number of us, and they had some of the best working on this case before. That would include Brenda Spilker, who was representing Nebraska Boiler, as was Scott Lattenhoff, both of them for different coverage periods. So there's not even evidence that they wouldn't have gone to Brenda Spilker or Scott Lattenhoff, or that the defense would have been different. What there is evidence in the record of is allegations of hearing loss from his military career, that he lied on his discharge about having that hearing loss because he wanted to find employment out in the civilian world, things of that nature. Those issues were fully vetted when this case was tried in front of Judge Fitzgerald. So, Your Honor, there was no prejudice. And I think this court was correct to find that there was a vigorous defense, and I think that's what the court meant in so finding. So, Your Honors, when we look at what was left, it's important to note Twin Cities is not coming here and arguing that there were material issues of fact and dispute or that summary judgment, the process was somehow flawed. They had their full day in court on the motion and cross motions for summary judgment. And for those issues that remained, which were solely related to the contribution, indemnity, some type of equitable theory of relief, they lost on those issues. Your Honors, I do have a cross appeal on the issue of whether American Family, the claim by Cleaverbrook, should have been still live, but of course it's kind of a contingent appeal. I see that I've got a minute and a half left. I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal if I could on that issue. Thank you, Your Honor.
I don't think we've got any. What's the lineup here? Who's
8 minutes, 7 and 5.
Okay. Mr. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Scott Paul. I'm here on behalf of American Insurance Company. In Riser 1, American Insurance Company was referred to Fireman's Fund. They're the same company for purposes of this case. So to the extent there's any confusion about who Fireman's Fund was in Riser 1, it's American Insurance Company. Mr. Schlosser noted that there was confusion in the record in Riser 1. He stated that Riser 1 wasn't an accurate representation of the facts of the case because of that confusion in the record. Well, the confusion in the record was in Riser 1 was because of the statements and representations that Twin City made to this court in leading up to Riser 1, and I want to get to those. But I think it's important to put this in the proper context. Twin City acknowledges that if the workers' compensation claim had been properly filed, that's the term they use in their brief, that they'd be liable. If there's a 1993 award, they would be on the hook for the coverage. But they say that didn't happen in this case because their client, their insured, Cleaver Brooks, was not the party to the case. Well, I think what we can find here through their own conduct, through their own representations to the court, that Nebraska Boiler was their insured. Mr. Sims made mention of it, and we made mention of it in our brief as well. In Riser 1, it's stated at page 909, Twin Cities insured Nebraska Boiler through a contract with its previous parent corporation, National Dynamics Corporation. It clearly states that this court in Riser 1 was contemplating that Twin City, their insured, was Nebraska Boiler. Where did they get that impression? Where did this court understand that from? In the motion to intervene filed by Twin City, they stated, Twin City respectfully notes that its insured has at all times been the only named defendant herein, and that perhaps they could simply have its counsel enter an appearance herein. This court then relied on that later in Reiser 1, saying, we agree the Twin Cities interest may be affected by the proceedings against its insured, Nebraska Boiler. Nevertheless, we conclude because Nebraska Boiler and Twin City are in privity with one another, due process does not compel intervention. So Twin City has argued here that we've got two separate entities. We have the Cleaver Brooks Nebraska Boiler, and we have the Nebraska Boiler that is National Dynamics. If to the extent there is any confusion in the record, they created the confusion in the record when they came before the court with their motion to intervene. They created that confusion with the review panel when they sought to intervene on behalf of its insured. This court in Reiser 2 then relied on Reiser 1 and relied on the review panel decision because it applied the law of the case. So both in Reiser 1 and Reiser 2, this court relied on the fact that Twin City told you that Nebraska Boiler was its insured. Judge Randall did the same thing. He noted in his opinion the many different spots, or he didn't call them out, but he noted that this court on numerous occasions had made reference to the fact that the insured of Twin City was Nebraska Boiler. So that's how we get down this road about confusing who Nebraska Boiler is, because the confusion started with the representations in the pleadings and in the argument to this court back at Reiser 1. The other thing that was pointed out by the parties is that Twin City was given an opportunity to appear as counsel of record in Reiser 2. That's the appeal on the merits. The court said, well, we're not going to let you intervene, but you can appear as counsel of record. Well, they didn't do it. Well, why wouldn't they appear as counsel on the record for Twin City if they were coming to the court saying, look, this is our insurer, we're going to be significantly exposed, we need to be heard, we need our day in court. Why wouldn't they then participate in the appeal on the merits? Well, as Twin City states at page 909, as Twin City states in their brief, they said that it's insured, it can't intervene because it was just a mistake previously that we made in Reiser 1. We are not prejudiced by the award, we're not bound by the award. So in their brief, in their reply brief, they say that's the basis why they did not seek to appear as counsel on the Reiser 2 case, is because they were no longer bound by the award and they were not prejudiced by it. Well, that's exactly the opposite of what they were telling you, what Twin Cities was telling you in Reiser 1 when they came to you and wanted to intervene. So yes, there's confusion, but the confusion was created to any extent by Twin City in this case. So what's the difference here? Yes, it's a bit ironic that I'm up here talking to you about confusion when the confusion in the case started with American saying we have coverage for this period of time when in fact they didn't. The difference is this. Twin City was on the coverage. Twin City insured Nebraska Boiler, National Dynamics in 1993, which is when the court determined, the Workers' Compensation Court determined was the loss. It was back in 1993. So they're on the risk, they're on the coverage. They charged a premium, they received a premium. They accepted the risk, and so they shouldn't be held now to say that they should be somehow out from under that risk because of the mistake made by America.
Did your client make a misrepresentation to the Workers' Comp Court?
Yes, Your Honor. Brenda Spilker, who was the attorney for American in the Workers' Compensation Court, did make a representation that was not accurate. I would not say it was an intentional misrepresentation. It was an innocent, negligent misrepresentation. And
was it gross negligence?
No, I don't believe it was, Your Honor. They immediately tried to correct it as soon as they found out what the true facts were, and they did everything they could to try to bring this matter to the attention of the court. So it comes down to, there's the old proposition of law that you can't create insurance coverage through estoppel. And that's really what's at work here, is that if American was going to be held to the statements of Spilker in the workers' compensation trial, there would be coverage by estoppel, because clearly they were not on the risk. American was not on the risk in 1993. They were in, I believe, 2001, 2002. So it's fair. I mean, they talk about indemnification. The basis for indemnification is the justice requires it. Well, I think justice requires that Twin City incur the burden here and incur the responsibility for the award. I see that I'm out of time. If I could just extend my comments for just a few seconds to follow up. The last thing I want to point out is that there's no prejudice here because Twin City paid the award. Why would they pay the award if they're not responsible? And if they are responsible or if they're not responsible, they're a volunteer paying the award. I think that's the best indication here that Twin City is not prejudiced and that any claim they have to lack of notice is because of the fact that...
Doesn't a 50% penalty provide a pretty strong incentive
to pay it? Yes, Your Honor, it does. But it makes it no less voluntary because you recall Twin City's taking the position now that they're not, it's not their insured. They're not prejudiced by this. It's not the award they're responsible for. So they can't have it both ways. And I think that's the best indication of any as to lack of prejudice and the fact that they really did have notice of this is they went ahead and paid the award.
They paid the award to the employee?
Yes.
Solely? Yes. I mean, it wasn't made out, for example, to a bunch of people so as to appear to reserve rights but nevertheless be a timely payment.
My understanding is, I don't know exactly the circumstances of that, Your Honor. My understanding was Reiser was paid, he's got his lump sum benefit, and he continues to get additional payments. We would ask that the court affirm the district court decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Whitler, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
And you have 5 minutes, is that correct?
That's correct. May it please the court, Terry Whitler, I'm appearing on behalf of SSW Inc., formerly known as National Dynamics, as well as the three individual defendants who were shareholders in National Dynamics. The appellant, Twin City Insurance, did not make any claim against National Dynamics, the dissolved corporation, or its former shareholders, the individuals. The appellee, American Insurance, did not make any claim against National Dynamics or the three former shareholders. The only party to make a claim against my clients was Cleaver Brooks, the plaintiff who brought the original action. The claim against the corporate defendant, National Dynamics, was dismissed because it had been dissolved and the claim that Cleaver Brooks sought to bring was not timely. There has been no cross-appeal with respect to that determination. Therefore, the court should affirm the trial court's determination dismissing National Dynamics. Cleaver Brooks also made claims against the three individual former shareholders who were parties to the asset purchase agreement. And the nature of that claim was essentially that if there were liabilities that Cleaver Brooks ended up assuming that were not insured, the three individual shareholders might be liable for those liabilities. It's clear that there was insurance in place. There may be a dispute about which insurance company is liable for the risk, but there is clearly insurance, and therefore there's no basis for the claim against the three individuals. The district court dismissed those claims against the individual as part of its final ruling in this case. There has been no cross-appeal with respect to that determination. Indeed, Cleaver Brooks, in its brief, the only party making a claim against those three individuals, has asked that the court affirm the district court's ruling in all respects. Therefore, there is no basis for any kind of further judgment against the three individual defendants, and we ask that the court affirm the ruling dismissing National Dynamics and dismissing the claim against the three individual defendants, regardless of the outcome.
There's a stipulation on which this was heard, is that right?
That's correct.
And what's the stipulation say with respect to these facts that you were just asserting? That the entity's been dissolved and there is coverage and regardless of the status of the three?
Well,
you want them out.
Right. There is not a stipulation as far as coverage to my knowledge. Okay. There certainly was a stipulation about the facts of the dissolution, the timeline with respect to that, the fact that notice was published adequately, the time to make a claim against the dissolved corporation ran, no claim was made.
And there's going to be coverage. Is that the inference?
No, the inference there is simply whether coverage or not, whether they had a claim or not, the time to make that claim has run.
Okay.
So the corporation's done.
Okay, thank you.
Now, with respect to the three individuals, the claim against them was a contingent claim. Essentially, it said, you sold us these assets, you didn't tell us that there was this workers' comp claim out there. If there's insurance, great, no problem. But if it turns out there's no insurance for this claim, then you may have obligations to us under this contract. The district court determined there was insurance coverage. The parties agree there's insurance coverage. They just dispute who has the coverage and argue that's sufficient to sustain the dismissal of the three individuals. And again, as I pointed out, while it says cross-appeal on the cover of the Cleaver Brooks brief, there is no cross-appeal set forth in the brief. There are no assignments of error. There are no arguments about why the individual defendants should be liable. Accordingly, the district court's judgment dismissing the individuals as well as National Dynamics should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So do we have any time for rebuttal? Minute and 25 seconds, Mr. Seams.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me touch on one thing that Twin Cities mentioned before, and then let me turn to American Insurance. Mr. Schlosser indicated that the declaratory judgment in this matter was filed in order to determine which carrier was responsible. Untrue.
Does this have to do with your cross-appeal?
I guess in a manner it does not, Your Honor. So I'll move along.
Why don't we dwell on the cross-appeal?
Yeah, sure. I'm glad to hear that Mr. Paul is acknowledging that the confusion really started with American Insurance making the incorrect representation. I'm a little bit disheartened to hear that they're throwing their attorney under the bus. What he neglected to mention is that the attorney got the information directly from the carrier. The attorney did not pull this out of her hat. Brenda Spilker, I think, made the representation in response to a question from Judge Fitzgerald as to what the coverage periods were. Now, I suppose implicit in that is Judge Fitzgerald may have been telegraphing that I might find a date of injury consistent with what the plaintiff's attorney was saying, that being sometime in 1993, although it had not been pled. And as this court found in Reiser 2, essentially establishing an unfortunate doctrine, I think, of amendment by implication, we're not challenging that, and we don't have a voice to challenge that. It's not been brought up by Twin Cities either. They had an opportunity to perhaps argue that in Reiser 1 and didn't. But, Your Honors, in the event that the court were to reverse on any basis and not to affirm the trial court, we believe that the claim against American Insurance should still be a viable claim. And we would ask that the trial court's decision be affirmed in all respects. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the next case of the day, which is State versus William C. Floyd, Jr.